Welcome to TA1. Everything you wanted to know about adventure racing and then some, with a heavy slant on the Eco Challenge, obviously. So, congratulations to everybody that successfully finished the Tiger Balm 2020 Virtual National Adventure Race Championships presented by Right Stuff. And I practiced that a lot, so I figured I better use it again. We had a good time here in South Dakota with Paulette and Eric Kincannon coming over and just destroying my course, sort of. I think they had a really good time. They weren't real sure about the swim-run part, but I think in the end they enjoyed it. Of course, it helped that we went from 8 inches of snow 10 days before to 90 degrees the day of the race. So it was fairly refreshing for them. So. And shout out to USARA for the Zoom after party. That actually was kind of fun. And if you enjoyed that, I guess you're really going to enjoy this episode because it's more raw, more better, more bones. So, yeah. Roy Malone telling us all about Eco Challenge, so let's get after it. Go fast, take chances. Thanks for listening, and I'll see some of you in Georgia in a week and a half. I'm excited. So, peace out. Bye.
It says, oh, I'm hearing something.
Yeah?
Yay!
Hey! Is this your first Zoom experience, Randy?
No, actually not. I did Bend Racing with it.
Okay.
So, and it worked really, really good. And then I got done and I couldn't find the audio files anywhere. But it turns out they were in the cloud and I had to just get them opened. And so they were there. I think this time I'm recording the computer, so it should be simpler, but it actually works pretty good. So
it does. And you know, what really makes me happy right now is that you're repping the brand.
So
I'm going to have to get you one of our new Bones branded buffs.
Oh, absolutely. Have to wear those all the time anyway, right?
Exactly. Good excuse to wear a mask and be stylish at the same time.
So, but, yeah, cool. So I guess, is it just me and you?
Just me and you. Yeah.
Sweet. Then we can talk trash about everybody else.
Well, there's not a lot of trash to be talked about with the rest of the team. It's probably more about, the trash is more on my end than anybody else's.
Yeah. I don't know about that. So let's start at the beginning. How'd you guys get in?
How did we get into Fiji?
Eco, yeah.
I guess we were able to cobble together a good enough video to get somebody's attention over there. And, you know, hopefully our history and our reputation of racing in the big races and, you know, racing with two of the top female U.S. athletes, adventure athletes, actually one of them is Canadian, but North American athletes, helped us along as well.
So, yeah. So, I mean, you didn't have any sob stories. You just are good, solid, world-class racers.
Yeah, and I think that's our challenge, is that we're a bunch of boring, experienced old racers that don't ever want to give up, and that's not always a good story.
No, but hey, it's good for racing.
Well, it is, you know, obviously we hope that, you know, we hope that our performance is looked upon by the people that are new into the sport, that are really enticed by the show and the community, that, you know, it's not always about the story. It's about, you know, coming together as a team, performing well, having a great time, creating some excellent memories, and bonding well with your teammates.
That is really what the racing is all about. That TV stuff is just I guess you could call it icing on the cake if you like that kind of cake.
Well, I mean, I honestly do. I mean, I think that what it does is it brings attention to the sport to the masses, right? And, you know, without that, you wouldn't have, we've received at least 20 inquiries about the sport and how to get into the sport. I've had coffee meetings the last 3 days with people that are super excited. And, you know, you wouldn't get that kind of recognition or publicity or enthusiasm about the sport if it wasn't shown to a broader audience.
Yeah, like I've added, I think I'm over 700 people to the Teammate Finder page.
Oh, wow.
And I have personally in the last, since probably Sunday, talked to probably 20 teams that are like, who do you know that wants to go and who can we sign up? And probably 5 or 6 of them have actually put teams together. So,
well, it'll be interesting. I'm sure that the folks over at the casting side of Ego Challenge will have a tough time with, you know, I don't know, is it 500? Is it 700 applicants? I mean, there's going to be quite a stack of resumes to get through in order to pick the 50 or so teams that will ultimately go to Patagonia.
Yeah. I don't know if they have said anything or if you can say anything, but do you think they're going to give a little preference to returning teams?
You know, I have not heard anything.
Okay.
I know in the past, ECO's policy was giving each team that finished in the top 10 an automatic entry to the next race.
Okay.
And when we finished ECO in 9th place in 2002, we were all excited because we knew we were automatically in 2003. And then obviously nothing happened for 17 years. So we were happy to get back in 2019. You know, we did not, you know, I think that there's been enough time that there's no spoiler alerts here. We obviously didn't finish in the top 10 this year, but we're hoping that, you know, our performance and our team will get a invitation to Patagonia in 2021.
Yeah. And see, I'm not even going to ask, do you want to go to Patagonia?
Oh, heck yeah. Come on. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So here's the bad part of, I've been asked, I think, 4 teams to go to do support. And I'm like, no, I watch those guys doing support, and it's like, I do not want to do that. I do not want to be there and not have anything to do, you know, except for 90 minutes of hell every couple of days.
Yeah, you know what? All of the, you know, whether it was cameramen, whether it was, the people that were handling logistics and the attacks all suffered mightily.
Yeah.
In Fiji with all of the rain and the mud and, you know, just the challenges. And so, you know, it's certainly not an easy job in Patagonia, man, with the weather.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to be a brutal experience for everyone.
Yeah. 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 I just can't, I literally know I couldn't be there and not be helping to document. It would kill me. So.
Yeah. Well, are you going to get an opportunity to go over there and shoot some?
I doubt it, but I mean, I keep asking. You know, I have a few emails that I can pull up, but nobody said yes yet. So if you got any connections, I'll use them.
I wish. I don't know that anyone's got any connections. That's a pretty tight-lipped organization, which
it really is. So where do I want to start? I mean. Did it surprise you that literally nothing came out until, I mean, you know, almost literally nothing came out until the show started? Were you surprised that there weren't like some sort of leaks?
Oh, I'm impressed. Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, I'm impressed that it didn't get out.
Yeah.
That's a long time to hold a secret.
Mm-hmm.
And, You know, there's, you know, when you do something like this and it's such a big event and you come home and you tell your friends and your family that you've been gone for 3 weeks in this wild, crazy adventure, and they ask you how you did, it's pretty hard to, you know, to and not say anything. So the fact that it didn't get out, that's a credit to the racers. That's a credit to the media. That's a credit to, you know, all of the support. I am surprised.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the media people and the workers and stuff, and I think even the racers, but it's like, how can some volunteer not have slipped up, or, you know, that would be where I thought something might have come from. But I'm really impressed by it. Can you compare O2 to this one? You know, Nathan can't remember O2 because he's so old, but.
Well, wait a minute. I'm 4 years older than Nathan, so that's not a good excuse.
Well, that's his excuse.
So 2002 to 2019, you know, going into it, my concern was 2002 was such a great experience for me personally and for our team. It was only the second expedition like race that I had done 17 years ago. And so I went into it a bit, you know, inexperienced and unseasoned, and I got decimated. I mean, I was tortured. I was multiple times in fetal positions, and literally it was more survival than it was a race. But that was what really sold me on the sport. You know, that was really what was exciting about it. And, you know, I don't know if, you know, 17 years later, there's just that many more years of experience, conditioning, training, whatever. But we didn't experience quite that level of utter devastation, I guess, is what I would say. We also expected to be out there a little bit longer than we were. I mean, in 2002, it took us 9.5 days to finish. And so I thought this particular race was going to be at least that, maybe even longer. So our race strategy was a little different going in. We actually raced a little bit earlier on, which ended up costing us a bit, but regardless, it's such an incredible country. The people are just phenomenal. I'm sure you've heard it again and again. It's really the culture that makes that race. And so in that respect, it was nice to see there was no changes.
That's really cool. Was it roughly the same-ish course this time?
No. Okay. I mean, there were a couple of sections.
Yeah. The waterfalls.
Yeah. The waterfalls. But even if it were, you know, 17 years later, I'm not going to remember that.
Yeah.
you know, obviously the crown jewels of the course, you know, the waterfalls, the swim section, I wouldn't call that crown jewel. I'd call that but you know, there were certain instances where you go, oh my God, I forgot all about this. But for the most part, it was, you know, it was unique, it was different, and it was a heck of a challenge.
Yeah. Were there as much paddling the first year?
The first year, the bulk of the paddling, nowhere near what it was this year. We did do a long paddle at the end of 2002 from the mainland to a couple of islands and then back to the mainland, which, you know, took us, you know, a long time. It was open ocean, much like the Outward Canoe. Mm-hmm. We didn't have the first Kamikau paddle like we did last year.
Okay. So you said your strategy was to start out slow. So, I mean, how do you start out slow with 60 canoes?
Well, I wouldn't say slow. I mean, I would say, you know, we were measured in terms of, you know, one, we didn't want to blow up.
Yeah.
Two, you know, I firsthand saw the devastation that bacteria does to open wounds in 2002. both personally, with my teammates, with other teams. I mean, the later part in the jungle, nothing heals in the jungle, right? It stays red, stays open, and it does bad things to you. And so, you know, what I took from 2002 was, hey, if you have an open wound, you take a couple of seconds, you put some, you know, dry powder on it, you make sure that it's clean, it's wrapped, and doesn't get infected any more than it needs to be, because otherwise you'll get taken out. And I would say that was kind of our strategy going into it, that, hey, we're going to take the time. If we need to clean up, if we need to take care of our feet, we're going to do that and not suffer on day 6, 7, 8. We should be able to, if we're healthy, we should be able to pass a lot of teams at that point.
Oh, and, I mean, did that work?
No. No, I mean, you know, we made a couple of tactical errors. Primarily the fact that on, I don't know, I think it was camp either 2 or camp 3, we didn't leave early enough. We decided to take a sleep. Didn't realize, you saw the video. I mean, there was a bike section where the mud was just absolutely horrendous, where you couldn't ride it. You're essentially curing your bikes. And we didn't, you know, obviously in a 1 by 50,000 map, you're not going to see that. And so you think, okay, well, we can cover this distance easily in 7 hours. We've got, you know, 11 hours to get there. You know, we didn't take that into account. So we ended up getting caught in the dark zone. We got caught up in the middle of the river for 12 hours, whereas all the teams that we were chasing just made it through.
Yeah.
And so for us, that was mentally really a tough one for us.
So, I mean, when that happens, I mean, what do you do? Just, like, say, do you scream and yell and stop for 30 seconds and then just, like, okay, that's what it is. Let's take care of ourselves and move on.
Yeah, you know, our team's not a bunch of yellers and screamers, which is probably why we didn't get any TV time. You know, it is what it is. I mean, yeah. I think you can't do anything about it at that point. The unique thing about Eco Challenge, unlike a lot of, well, I guess pretty much all the rest of the Expedition Link races that I'm aware of, is that you don't know the extent of the race beforehand.
Yeah.
So you get the maps at each camp.
Okay.
And so you don't even know when the race is going to end until you get to that last camp and see the last set of maps. And so even up until day 6, we were still thinking, okay, maybe this thing's, you know, still 9 days. And then we get to the final camp and you go, oh my God, there's maybe 24 hours left of racing. At that point, it's pretty hard to make up time.
Well, I mean, so that begs the question. I mean, do you wish you could get all the maps at once? But, you know, then you got to deal with maps all at once.
No, I like the format. I really do. I think, you know, despite the fact we've been racing as long as we have, it was a bad strategy going into it. And I made the wrong call on that. And then I think that, you know, obviously if we get an invitation to Patagonia, that will change.
But I mean,
after 24 hours, but we're going to go hard.
Yeah. But I mean, you sort of know it's going to rain, but you didn't know that the rain was going to do what it did to the roads. So, I mean, can you really call it a bad decision? It's more like an unlucky decision.
Well, maybe. I mean, and, you know, it's one of those things that after the race, you go through your head and you go, oh, you know, that one decision would have had such a big impact on our race. And yeah, you make a bunch of little decisions in the course of 7 days, and hopefully none of them have that material of an impact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it had been 9 days, maybe that 12 hours wouldn't have been a big deal. I mean, we've certainly been able to overcome that amount of time before.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, it is what it is, and we learn from it, and we take that on to the next race.
Yeah. How do you plan your sleep strategy with mandatory 90-minute breaks and the 5 3-hour sleeps or 3 5-hour sleeps? I can't remember.
Yeah, it's 5 3-hour sleeps.
Okay.
At least there you go. Well, the thing is, you really don't have, you know, with the mandatory sleeps, you really don't have to manage it that much. I mean, it kind of manages itself, right? Because the optimal place to take, well, really the only places to get credit for those sleeps are going to be at the camps.
Yeah.
And I think a couple of the there were a couple of CPs that we were allowed to take it in as well. But, you know, I get why they're doing it. And, you know, obviously you got to have an opportunity for press to be able to talk with the Rangers. But there's, you know, a lot more sleep. There was a lot more sleep, especially for us where we had a 12-hour break in the river, right?
Yeah.
We were stopped at Camp One for 14 hours, 15 hours, something like that. And so we got more sleep in this race than we have in a lot of other expeditions.
Yeah, 14 hours. You could have went and run a separate race that amount of time.
That was another one of those instances where, you know, again, it's beyond anyone's control.
Yeah.
But it certainly didn't do us any favors.
Yeah. So this is, I don't know. No, it's not a dumb question because I've seen people ask this, you know, online. And so your mandatory 90 minutes at the camp, if you take a sleep break, is that a mandatory 4.5 hours or how did that work?
No, you were required to take 90 minutes at each camp regardless.
Okay.
If you chose one of your 5 sleep cards, that was a 3-hour sleep card.
Okay.
You could take 2 if you wanted. You know, you could sleep for 6 hours if you chose.
All right. So,
but, those 90 minutes were kind of just off the clock.
Okay. So they're completely separate. One doesn't have anything to do with the other.
Correct.
Yeah. So if you take a 3-hour sleep, how much sleep do you get? I mean, how much actual sleep do you get?
Well, you had the 90 minutes plus the 3 hours. And so typically 90 minutes was taken up in transition stuff.
Okay.
And it's been a while since we've had distance crews. Right, and in an expedition length race.
Yeah.
God, back in Primal Quest days was probably the last time we had any kind of assistance. And so we did have help there, but still breaking down, you know, making sure you had the right gear, all that kind of stuff typically takes, you know, a fair amount of time. And so we would get, you know, usually a full 3 hours.
Okay.
You know, one of the things that I learned midway through the race that I should have been thinking of earlier in the race was having some more assistance from our TAC with the navigation. So I was spending more time on the maps than probably I really should have. And so I got a little bit less sleep. But, you know, again, that's one of those things that unless you have assistant crews, you don't have everything necessarily dialed in like you used to.
Yeah. So what you're saying is your TAC should be a world-class navigator.
A TAC should be a world-class everything. Right? Cook, navigator, bike mechanic, logistics guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, a little bit comedian to keep things light.
So yeah.
It's super important to get that fifth member of the team correct.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And, you know, if they speak Fijian, that would be a bonus.
Well, the nice thing is all the Fijians spoke English, so that's the problem. But you know, in Patagonia, that'll be different. Yeah, if someone speaks Spanish, that'll be
that's I volunteered Paulette because she's got a little bit of Spanish and she's been here twice and yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so
she willing to get out there and suffer for 3 weeks?
She's like, she's like. Well, do you suppose I could go down a couple of weeks before and stay a couple of weeks after? Okay. So I'm asking you a lot of personal type questions. How much money did you spend hiring porters? How much did it cost to hire a porter or a horse?
Not enough. You know, we didn't think through that well. You know, fortunately, we were in the top, you know, quarter, top 20% of teams that went through there.
Yeah.
From what I hear, the teams that were in the back of the pack, you know, the inflation rate in Fiji went up in a matter of hours. So, we actually ran out of money. Let me see. We were short of money for the third and final allowable porter section. So we got, I think, a second-rate guy who was still badass, but he was holding out. I mean, it wasn't for the guys that were holding out for the big dollars. So I got to tell you, Randy, and you probably heard this or read it, but the people there are just unbelievable. I mean, yeah. both from a personality standpoint, but also specimens. I mean, these guys were running in bare feet through creeks that were waist deep with boulders that were, you know, half the size of them, and they were flying.
Yeah, you see that. I think that's one of the things the coverage did really, without specifically doing it, they showed that. I mean, how welcoming they were and how tough they were. Oops.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Now I can. You just dropped out for a second.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, it's the internet. What do you expect? Yeah. But so where did you guys have the most fun, and where did you have the least amount of fun?
Let's see. I would say the least amount of fun had to be the mud bike section.
Yeah.
And that was both physical as well as psychological. You know, knowing that for every minute that we had to carry our bikes as opposed to ride them, we were getting that much further from the dark zone cutoff.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't just physically draining, it was emotionally draining and frustrating. And so that was, I would say that was probably our toughest part. I would say our most fun part actually happened to be the swim. And that was really only because Mary Chandler was smart enough to recommend that we bring some inflatable dinghies. And so we got to the top of those falls, and instead of swimming them, we blew up our little pack rafts and paddled that section at night where it was raining. I mean, we would have been freezing our asses off. And to be able to get in those little boats with our little paddles and be able to paddle through it, I don't know, it just made us pretty darn excited.
So how did, I mean, Mary's as smart as anybody I know. How did she know to suggest that?
Well, she read my 2002 race report.
Okay.
And in 2002, we had a swim like that. In fact, it was that same swim. We didn't obviously know that it would still, you know, be in this race. But, yeah. You know, I went into pretty good detail in terms of the suffering that we experienced going through that swim, including swimming with eels. I think at least the rumor was that there were eels in those lakes. And Mary never wanted to swim more than she has to. Said, hey, how about if we bring these? And so we did. And, you know, it's one of those things, those quote-unquote strategies – rarely work, you know, usually carrying 3 pounds of extra weight for nothing. It certainly wasn't fun hauling them up the ropes, but in this case, they happened to work out for us.
And I mean, so you're saying, you know, pool toys, I mean, what were they exactly? Were they pool toys? Were they pack rafts?
they're not not one of those mattresses. They're more than that, more substantial than the mattress, but they weren't a pack raft either. Okay. They're called climbed, something like that. They're little yellow, little orange boats, and yeah, they're good enough just for wading around. Certainly, you wouldn't want to put them in any kind of rapids, but they work for us for that particular swim.
And obviously you get wet, but did it basically keep you out of the water when you were in them?
It did. But, you know, the swim wasn't just at one big pool. It was a series of pools, and you get out, and you're tripping over rocks, and you're going over little islands, and so we're carrying the boat. I mean, it wasn't smooth sailing by any means, but it was certainly better than being fully immersed for 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah. So, you know, they talked about the water temp, but what was the air temp like at night when you did it?
Cold.
Okay.
Really cold. Anywhere you can see your breath, kind of cold.
Okay. Yeah. So you weren't getting out and warming up a little bit, walking between pools of water.
No. We were pretty spent at the end of it. I mean, not like some of the teams you saw on TV, but you know, we certainly were feeling it after we got out.
Yeah. See, you should have been on TV for being smart.
maybe in 2001.
If I get a chance, I'll mention that to Bear.
All right.
So, I mean, how long did you have to carry the extra 3 pounds?
Well, that whole section from camp to camp. So it was, I guess it would probably have been, I mean, we did it on the stand-up paddleboard and on that trip. I mean, it's probably 2 days.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, there was a penalty to pay for it, right?
Yeah. So you weren't hypothermic much.
Yeah, we weren't in the med tent. So, I mean, that was a good thing.
Yeah. So how do you, I mean, how do you guys feel about paddling on the open ocean like that? I mean, you guys are experienced, but it's not what you do every day, right?
It's definitely a unique experience. And we finished up in a pretty decent storm. Mm. And, you know, at night when, you know, you've got, you know, an outrigger that's just slamming the waves and there's no moonlight, it's pitch dark, you know, obviously you're tired, you're mentally just spent, and you're trying to head to the finish line, you're thinking, oh my God, am I going to even finish this thing? Or am I going to, if we flip, there's no way we're flipping this back over. We're going to have to do 3 miles from the finish line. That part of it, I guess, you know, the adrenaline is enough to keep you engaged.
Mm-hmm. way of putting it.
And the navigation in open waters is tricky just because of the currents, right? And you don't know how far and how fast, especially at night. Fortunately, we were kind of island hopping, so we could see something on the horizon to aim towards, but it certainly can get tricky.
Yeah, I think that's one way of saying it. Did you get to go over early enough to like do some of the sailing and paddling and do anything with those, you know, the boats?
Yeah, we, as a team, we actually engaged a sailor over there. He had his own kamikao. It was a much larger one than we had. Unfortunately, you know, we didn't get there early like a lot of teams did. And so, you know, he didn't have time to take all the teams out, but he certainly helped us with the navigation, the winds. And unfortunately, or maybe fortunately because we're not skilled sailors, you know, the wind didn't really play a part in this race.
Yeah.
Historically, it was super windy. East side of the island was really dead that particular morning.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are all expecting to sail and you end up paddling for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah.
I mean, how efficient are they when you paddle them? I mean, you know, you look at it on TV and you think, oh, they're going pretty good pace, but, I mean, is it, or do you feel like you're just crawling?
Well, they're more efficient than the Billy Billies. You're crawling.
Yeah.
You know, you can, if you get a rhythm going, obviously you can probably maximize the whole speed, but the whole speed's pretty darn slow to start with.
Yeah, so you're not getting up on plane very easy.
No.
Well, speaking of, so how long were you on the Billy Billy?
Ooh. You know, honestly, I don't know the number of hours. Okay. You know, we put on probably late morning and we got off. It all kind of blends together. Yeah, I would say, if I were to guess, probably around 12 hours or so.
So, yeah, that's a – And I think that's the thing that the coverage doesn't get. I mean, they talk about how long it is, but I don't think you really, you don't really know that when they say, well, yeah, it's 12 hours. It's like, yeah, well, yeah, but they look like they're going fast. So that can't be that bad.
Not in the Billy Billy's, man. There was zero current. I mean, maybe fish flow. Yeah. But trying to move, to try to locomote those boats with just a couple of sticks is pretty darn challenging. It sounds like some teams got a little creative towards the back. Either that or the Fijians got creative and created a commercial enterprise out of it. But for us, it was slow go.
Yeah, I think AR Georgia spent $4 and had basically they looked like they hacked the ends of the bamboo to make them sort of paddle-ish. But
brilliant. Yeah, I wish we had done that.
What ended up being the I mean, did you like a kayak paddle? Did you Mississippi River boat them? How did you do it?
We ended up with kayak paddle strategy, okay. And you know, alternating standing and sitting. Mm-hmm. We did have to stop a couple of times to change out the bamboos that we started with for some ones that were a little more suitable to that. I mean, the first one we had was just, I mean, it had to have weighed, you know, 8 to 10 pounds. And so trying to paddle with that was just insane. We got our system down and it ultimately got us where we needed to go.
So, I mean, out of 12 hours, how many hours was it completely silent between the four of you?
Much to Mary's chagrin, probably most of it. You know, we're a fairly silent team when we're racing. Where I think, there's certain instances where stories or jokes or songs will come out, but you know, we like to conserve our energy. So we were quiet for a fair amount of it.
Okay. I guess what? It doesn't surprise me. Plus, what are you gonna say? Hey, there's another tree. Hey, there's another tree. But I mean, were there like villages and people along the river at least to break it up a little bit?
A few.
Okay.
Yeah, we started in a village. We saw a couple of villages along the way, and you know, again, what helps pass the time in PD is, you know, whenever you come even close to a village, every single villager that is within a, you know, a 2 mile radius of that particular area is out and cheering you on. And that's so motivational, you know, as you're burning the hours.
Yeah. Just something to look forward to. Excuse me. So you finish to a typical adventure race audience, one person. Well, two technically, right? Because you're taxed there.
Right.
And some cameramen, blah, blah, blah. Is that a little weird or is it, you know, I mean, there's been a lot of times you've probably finished two people at a race, so.
Yeah, we're used to a pretty Spartan finish line.
Yeah.
You know, even if you win a race, you're not, it's not like you've got hundreds cheering you in. It's just the nature of the sport.
Yeah.
You know, for us, it didn't matter. I mean, our success is getting all four of us across the finish line, healthy, happy with each other. And, you know, despite the 3 hours that it took us to go that final distance from the last checkpoint to the finish line, you know, we were all in good shape and still friends. And you know, ultimately, that's all you can ask for.
Well, that's kind of the most important part, too. So it's not all you could ask for.
Yeah, good point.
So, I mean, how were you? You know, obviously, you probably had some little nicks and bruises and stuff, but other than that, good?
Yeah, we were actually in really good shape. We didn't have any hospital trips or anyone that got any kind of infections or whatnot. And I think that was part of the result of kind of how we raced. Mm-hmm. So, you know, had it gone a few more days, I like our chances.
Yeah.
Our team actually went out to race China a month after Fiji and did a race over there. And we actually ended up winning that race. But, you know, we felt good enough to be able to do that after the race.
Oh, that's pretty amazing. That's kind of funny. I'm like, how could you go race after that race? Oh, yeah, this Eco Challenge was a long time ago.
Yeah, can you believe it's almost been a year?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty strange.
That was pre-pandemic, you know.
Yeah.
It's hard to remember back then.
Yeah, that's like 10 years in normal years life.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, all right, this one. I want to know, what happens after you cross the finish line and Bear talks to you, do you get some congratulations? They put you on a boat or a helicopter? What happens?
Well, we finished so late at night that I think Bear was sleeping. So Kevin Hodder,
okay,
the race director, welcomed us in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, the cool thing is we finished on Mana Island, which is just it's a beautiful resort island. It's off the mainland.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when you finish, you are, you know, set up in a hotel room to sleep it off. And then, you know, we get the 5-star treatment as soon as we wake up and can enjoy the Paradise Island.
Yeah, that doesn't sound so bad.
Yeah, no, it's really nice.
Yeah, just guess what? Don't expect that after every race from now on.
It's a high bar. It's a high bar.
Yeah, it's like, well, we have a tarp over there that you can sleep under.
Yeah, that's all right. You know, we like whatever we've got. You know, as long as it's dry, we'll take it.
Yeah. So, see, I'm at a loss now because I can't ask people, well, now what's next on the list? Because nobody knows what's next on the list, but are you doing – well, I know you did a – and maybe you don't want to talk about your bikepacking adventure, but you got other things on the – that you're doing?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's – even if adventure racing weren't a thing, you know, I think all of us would – in this sport would still be looking for something that would push us, you know, push our boundaries, challenge us physically, mentally, et cetera. You know, and you know, whether it's bike packing, whether it's, you know, ultra running multi-days, you know, I think we're all trying to create our own little experiences within the bubbles that we've got to live in right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, as things improve and as things get better, you know, certainly we're looking at 2021 and what the season looks like, based on, you know, hopefully the calendar that's posted as tentative. And, you know, we expect that we'll be doing 2 to 3 expeditions next year you know, continuing on. And the thing about this break, you know, it's bittersweet, right? The tough thing is I've had 19 consecutive years with at least one expedition length race. And this is going to break that record. So I really wanted to hit 20 years consecutive. But that's the bitter part of it. The sweet part is, you know, the body's been able to heal. And after so many years of racing, there's always wear and tear that accompanies these long races. And so it's been nice trying to get the body back in its normal state.
Well, that's one way to look at it. I got a full set of Primal Quest maps if you want to come out and redo that.
Hey, Badlands. That was one of my favorite U.S. races. I love that race.
Yeah.
It's a great area.
It's pretty nice. Yeah, we have a full set that we pull out pretty regularly and use for different things. So,
well, I would skip the prairie paddle. You know, that's one part of it that I would not do again.
Yeah, that will send shivers down.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, you know, it's awful when people, you know, 10 years later refer to it as awful.
Yeah, exactly. The Badlands, though, man, I go back there in a heartbeat. That's an incredible area.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So we're Paulette's actually in California right now, but when she gets back, we got to go out there to do some nav practice for her because she's doing a Jeep rally out there in October. It's all 7 days of map and compass in a Jeep.
The Rebel Rally.
You know it.
I do. Actually, I met with a couple of gals who are doing it to help them with their navigation. So it's, yeah, they did it last year and they just had a terrific time. And I think it's pretty neat that you've got, you know, a sport that caters strictly to women.
Yeah.
And, you know, they get an opportunity to go out there and just show what they've got.
Yeah. And it's not that I need it, but boy, has it helped my navigation doing all that stuff and being out there and, you know, triangulating and shooting bearings and
yeah.
Those
and they're doing it at speed, right? I mean, you're doing 40 miles an hour.
Not to checkpoints. I mean, you know, the time distance part, maybe it's speed, but you know, the black checkpoints, there is literally nothing on the ground.
Right.
And they got to get within 30 meters right. to, it's like, that's hard.
That's hard. That's very hard.
Especially when you have to plot it.
Well, and it's longe lap too.
Yeah. That's been a whole new ball of wax to learn.
Yep.
So, yeah. Hey, I feel like I'm going to give Chris and Stu a run for their money by the time the Rebel's over.
Good luck with that.
So, well, at least I talk a little bit more than they do. So, so what didn't we talk about? Anything? Here's a question we'll finish on. How did the race compare to the expectations of somebody that did it before? That's a long question.
How did it compare to the expectations?
Because you probably had some expectations going into it. You know, were they matched better, worse?
Well, let's see. I'll break it down into a couple of things. One, I was concerned that 17 years later, the people would have changed. Mm. Right? We got such a warm welcome in 2002. You know, maybe it's just a concern about, you know, how jaded, you know, we're getting kind of with different countries. But, you know, we got there and, boy, you know, people were just, you know, it's like a time warp. You go into that area and the unbridled happiness, passion, warmth, it's off the charts. So that part of it, loved it. It was with, you know, excitement that the expectation met reality. From an organization standpoint, ECO is top notch.
Yeah.
I mean, everything went off without a hitch. Transitions, logistics, pre-race, post-race, celebrations. I mean, it was, you know, honestly, I don't know how you pull something like that off other than I know they've got a ton of staff and they've got some dollars to work with.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was, as a racer, it was fun to be part of. And, you know, everyone should get a chance to experience that type of, you know, that race experience.
Cool. So, okay, I do have one more question for you. So I am talking to the Guatemalans tomorrow. What do you want to? What would be a question you would ask them, racer to racer?
Racer to racer for the Guatemalans.
Yeah.
I'd love to read a race report of theirs.
Okay.
To see kind of a firsthand experience, you know, how they handled each of the various sections, because each one was its own little story in and of itself, right? One of the things that really surprised me when I was out there was the difficulty of the stand-up paddleboarding, right? That's a new discipline for most of us in the sport. It's the first time I've done it in a race. And the first stand-up paddleboard was 8 hours on the board. You know, that's a long time to stand balanced on something.
Yeah.
But the hardest part was the reservoir. After the long swim, we got on our static paddleboards.
Yeah.
And on the map, it looks pretty simple, right? There's a reservoir, you head northwest, and the checkpoint's in the far northwest corner.
Yeah.
And then you get on the reservoir. Of course, we did it at night, and you find out quickly that reservoir is maybe half full or a third full.
Yeah.
And you've got this maze, this matrix of rivers and tributaries that are running into it. That when you get to that northern part of the lake, those things wind in and out and all over the place. And you know, we had a heck of a time trying to find our way out of that at night. Especially, you know, I had handed the maps over to Charles at that point because I was spending, after having the three and a half days or whatever it was, you know, he got us to the right spot, but you know, it was a lot harder than I expected it to be.
Yeah.
So I would ask them how they did that, you know, during that stand-up paddleboard section across the reservoir.
No, I will. That's a good question because, yeah, from what, you know, watching on TV, yeah, it looks like you're just paddling.
you are until you get to that northern end, and then it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
But I think you saw a little bit of Georgia, Air Georgia, with, you know, with some of the same challenges. You know, when you see that day, you realize during the day, you realize how confusing it really is at that part of the lake.
Yeah. So did you binge the show or did you spread it out a little bit?
We watched it over the course of the week.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's better. I got two episodes to go yet. So see,
oh,
I
still have... impressive.
Yeah.
Well, then, you know, it is a spoiler alert for you. I shouldn't have said anything.
Oh no. I've been spoiled early.
Okay.
So to speak. So no, and I've talked about it before, so I don't mind spoilers. I mean, I don't care if I know that the guy's going to die. I want to know how it happens. So in the movies.
You want to watch it happen.
Yeah. So, all right, cool, Roy. So, yeah, who knows? Oh, are you guys going to Oregon? Is that on your list?
Yeah. I think so. We're going to actually meet as a team next week to talk about what we want to do and kind of solidify our calendar. And, you know, if you haven't yet, you really ought to get Mary on the podcast. I know that may be a bit of an arm twist, but she is, I'm so, you know, really honored and lucky to have a Mary Chandler, to have a Jen Sager, to have a Charlie Hunnis want to race on Team Bones, because those guys are class acts.
Mm-hmm. They are.
Team athletes and just terrific human beings. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm so special. I've had everybody but Charles, and we'll get to him one of these days.
Yeah, if you can understand his French, that's the challenge, especially after 3 days of no sleep.
Okay, we'll get him when he's fresh.
There you go.
So, all right, cool. Well, thanks for the chat and filling us in, and hopefully we'll see you in Oregon.
Hope so. Always good talking to you. And send me your address so I can get you a mask for your social distancing.
I will do that.
All right.
All right. Thanks.
Take care, Randy.
All right. Bye.
I was just out of the service thumbing through the classifieds when an ad that said old Chevy somehow caught my eye. The lady didn't know the year or even if it ran, but I had that $1,000 in my hand. It was way back in the corner of this old ramshackle barn, with 30 years of dust and dirt on that green army tarp. And when I pulled the cover off, it took away my breath. What she called a Chevy was a 66 Corvette. I felt a little guilty as I counted out the bills. What a thrill I got when I sat behind the wheel. I opened up the glove box and that's when I found the note. The date was 1966 and this is what he wrote. He said, my name is Private. home. But for every dream that shattered, another one comes true. This car was once a dream of mine, now it belongs to you. Though you may take her and make her your own, you'll always be riding with Private Malone. Well, it didn't take me long at all, I had her running good. Love to hear those horses thunder underneath her hood. I had her shining like a diamond, and I'd put the ragtop down. All the pretty girls would stop and stare as I drove her through town. The buttons on the radio didn't seem to work quite right, but it picked up that oldie show, especially late at night. I'd get feeling sometimes if I turn real quick, I'd see a soldier riding shotgun in the seat right next to me. It was a young man named Private Andrew Malone, who fought for his country and never made it home. But for every dream that shattered, another one comes true. This car was once a dream of his back when it was new. He told me to take her and make her my own. And I was proud to be riding with Private Malone. But one night it was raining hard, I took the curb too fast. I still don't remember much about that fiery crash. But someone said they thought they saw a soldier pull me out. They didn't get his name, but I know without a doubt it was a young man named Private Andrew Malone, who fought for his country and never made it home. But for every dream that shattered, another one comes true. This car was once a dream of his back when it was new. And I know I wouldn't be here if he hadn't tagged along. Yeah, that night I was riding with Private Malone. Oh, thank God I was riding Private Malone.